Welcome back to the Forecast F1 podcast. Samantha here with fellow hosts Anton and Savannah. Today we are diving into Suzuka, the Japanese Grand Prix. Verstappen back on top, McLaren right on his tail, and rookies making headlines. So I think we have a few things to talk about. We'll start, Anton, with the fact that in the last episode, I know that you were really hoping for rain, of course. We didn't see a lot of that, but did Suzuka live up to your expectations this year?
We were actually promised some rain on lap 20 by Norris's engineer, but that didn't turn out to be the case. Did it live up to my expectations? I mean, we seem to be those podcasters that always say at the beginning of the episode that we have a lot to talk about. I wasn't going to say that for this one, because I think we didn't have as much spectacle as for some of the other weekends, the first two weekends of this season. But then again, I mean, we've seen Verstappen masterclass, which was definitely very impressive. So it's not like there's nothing to talk about at all.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Savannah, what about yourself? What were a few takes, hot takes that you would take initially from this weekend?
Well, I was very in tune with what was happening for Yuki being his debut with Red Bull this weekend. So I was focused on him and seeing how he was performing. And I know we touched on that last weekend as well, of whether that switch was going to go yay or nay for Lawson in that Red Bull second seat. And I think the final bell rang, and he was kind of booted back to his original position where he was last year. So I definitely think, like Yuki said right in the beginning when the weekend started, he still needed to get used to the car, but it wasn't completely out of tune with him, and I think we saw that in one or two results in the free practice sessions. I think that we all knew that the McLaren drivers also were going to keep their pace, being the front runners of both championships for now, at least. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised to be hearing the Dutch anthem after the race.
Well, I was going to say we've had three different anthems thus far this season, which is interesting. Although, actually, if you look at the front, although I don't want to jump right into the race, but it does seem like the overtaking up front has reduced a little bit. But let's try to do this chronologically again. Actually, the practice sessions this weekend were quite interesting, not only for, of course, we had a huge crash of Jack Doohan, but also we had several fires, not in cars, luckily, but
thank goodness,
fire in the grass.
Yeah, I think that side of the world has had quite a few natural disasters or incidents in the last while. I mean, we had the hurricane that was coming towards Australia right as when we were going into Melbourne for the season starter, and now we're having fires on track in Suzuka. So I hope that's the last of the worries of the natural incidents for the season, at least. But I'm still hoping to see at some point animal on track, as that seems to be a annually done event as well at one or two of the circuits.
Yeah, typically you're going to, if there's animals on the track, I would say the Canadian Grand Prix, you'll see quite a few groundhogs every once in a while. it definitely is an unusual thing for us to see when it comes to red flag incidents. I would say that crash that Doohan had going back into FP2 was definitely a nasty one, and an unfortunate one for him. He seems to have had a little bit of a challenge since he entered F1 this season, and this looked like it actually was more of a driver error than anything.
Yeah. I think it was still a scary crash, though, because, I mean, he had just come out of turn one, and his DRS, I don't know if he didn't tap the brakes as hard as what he should have, because as far as I know, when they hit the brakes, the DRS does have an automatic close. And he did say he did try something in a simulation, but again, something went technically wrong with the car, and he couldn't do anything about it. That crash was over 300 kilometers an hour, so I think he was a bit shaken, but I'm just glad he got out of it unscathed.
Yeah, I guess the idea was that he should have had manually closed the DRS, because indeed it closes with braking, but I guess he left it open up until the point of braking, which was too late. Apparently, you know, these are, of course, things that can happen to someone that doesn't have the experience of a full-time driver or someone that has already raced at the circuit. But quite unlucky, or, well, self-imposed, but still unlucky. And I wasn't even sure after I saw that if he was going to be all right. I think it's it must have been quite a heavy impact. But he was able to make it to FP3 and also make it onto qualifying, where, well, actually, he didn't finish last. It was because I was sort of afraid that that would happen to him. And it's not a really great start of the season for Jack. But Lance Stroll managed to set an even worse time than Jack, and actually that was surprising to me, because Lance had a pretty decent start of the season. We talked about it, but this weekend here in Japan wasn't it for him. But I think talking a little bit about qualifying, I think it was an interesting session, and I think the main headline, of course, Verstappen setting pole. And I think that Q3 session was very nice to watch. I definitely first thought that the McLarens were going to be split, because Norris didn't really set a very great first flying lap, and Piastri did, and I thought it was going to be just either one of the McLarens that really stood a chance. Beforehand, maybe, you know, I was thinking Russell again had a good build up to the weekend, decent practice sessions, but that lap from Verstappen really came out of nowhere. And it was interesting to see also the comparison of that final lap of Norris and that of Verstappen, where you see them go head to head. If you look at those images, you'll see that actually it was very much for Norris to set it on pole, but Verstappen gained a lot on that last chicane just before the finish line, the last few corners, and that's really where he made a huge difference. And I think throughout the weekend we could see that there were drivers taking different lines there, some taking more curb than others. Of course, you got to be careful with those curbs, because it can also damage your car. I mean, we've seen not only this year, of course, last year as well, but take as an example, you know, for example, that front flap wing from Tsunoda that just, you know, gave in by itself last race out in China when he was still in the racing bull. You know, it can be very minimal, even changes of airflow that can damage the car, let alone a big curb. But that was really the difference that he made. And I think it was a great lap, and I think it was somewhat surprising. I don't think I didn't expect it, let's just say that. And judging from your predictions, I think none of us really had expected the Red Bull to be that good, or the question really becomes, is the Red Bull that good, or is it just Verstappen that you know outperforms it? Because you just touched on Tsunoda. I think that was another big storyline, of course, like you mentioned. I mean, we didn't talk about it after our podcast, because we didn't know yet at that point in time, but Tsunoda being getting into the Red Bull at his home track is, I don't know, I think on the one hand a great story, on the other hand, of course, there's also a lot of pressure. And actually, you know, coming into the weekend, I felt that he, you know, the practice session, he was, all three of them, he was quite all right. And it was just, it was a bit of a shame that the sort of strategy that Red Bull went with in that Q2 session with qualifying, where they send him out like after, because we had a red flag there too. I think again it was for grass on fire, and then, you know, I was expecting all of the teams to wait for sending the drivers out, but Tsunoda went out quite quickly. I even thought that perhaps he had time for another cool down lap, because I think when he set that time, which eventually put him 15th, but of course we had Sainz, who had some grip penalties. But when he went out, he even had 2 minutes left on the clock. I thought he might be able to still do a cool down lap and set another lap, but perhaps he didn't have enough fuel to do that. But yeah, very unfortunate for Tsunoda. So I guess a tale of two sides for Red Bull all in all.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting because I really do feel that you mentioned there, Anton, whether or not it is the car or whether or not it's just Max. And I think that this was, in my opinion, a really great example of how incredibly talented Max is. And I think it was more a true testament to his skill itself as a driver. He's not in the fastest car right now at this point in terms of pace. It is evident that the McLarens hold that. So being able to maximize everything, no pun intended, but maximize everything that he could out of that lap. And this is not an easy track to do that with in itself, regardless. However, I would say that historically, he does very well in Suzuka. This is his fourth race win, so in Suzuka track, back-to-back. So he has done historically well, but I would still say, nonetheless, it was a unbelievable lap, pole lap, and quite frankly, probably one of his best. I would also say that it's interesting the contrast that you give with Yuki, because I do agree. I was very surprised with the fact that Red Bull decided to go with the strategy of really not giving him enough time to kind of maybe do another lap, warm up and go for it, because maybe it could have been the fact that the practice sessions he was doing so well, so they just had faith and confidence in the fact that he could probably nail it. However, I mean, he's just gotten in there. So I was a little confused by that decision. However, I don't think that really would lead to a testament to his skill. I do think that he may have performed and probably got extracted a little bit more to get into that final Q session had he have been given a little bit more time.
And Savannah, what did you make of the surprise entries in Q3? Although surprise, but I guess we weren't all expecting Isaac Hadjar and Oli Behrman and perhaps also Alexander Albon to be making it into Q3.
Well, I think seeing some people like Sainz not make it into top 10, obviously, is a bit of a bummer, but we did see Albon make it through, so I was quite chuffed with that. And I think Hamilton, it's not the eighth we want to see from him with Ferrari. We're all wanting some form of an eighth title, but for now, we have to settle for P8, I suppose. I was happy to see Antonelli up there as well. Hadjar also gave a outstanding performance, in my opinion. And having Behrman also up there with the rookies in Q3 was amazing to see. Our eternal rookie also just didn't make the cut, unfortunately, and I think he slotted in P12 after Sainz eventually got his grid penalty, which knocked him down to 15th for the start of the race. So Alonso, Lawson, and Tsunoda all moved up one position each. And we almost saw Gasly in the top 10, so that was quite interesting to see as well. Our top 5, I was not heavily surprised, as they have been more or less the same front runners since our season started, so it was good to see them still keeping the pace going as what they've been doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I personally would not have expected Isaac Hadjar to have such a good start the season. Of course, today was his first actual points, but he has been very decent also in the weekend in China, and of course in Australia. You know, he had his race start. It was actually funny because I was looking at the post race show and I heard Helmut Marko actually referring to Isaac having good first three races of the season. So I guess Helmut's memory is not really that good regarding his comments on Hadjar's weekend in Australia. But anyway,
his memory isn't great.
I think he really hit the...
It's funny you say that, Anton. Sorry to interrupt, because he actually... I was just watching the post-race show not that long ago, and they were interviewing Helmut, and he went on to say that the race Suzuka was 50 laps, and it was shortly after that they interviewed Christian Horner, who said, well, I think Helmut seems to maybe have missed three laps out of the race because it was 53. Yeah. So maybe his memory isn't that sharp at times.
this seems to be a bit of a trend there, but... I think Hadjar, I personally, I think we talked about it in the season start episode of this podcast as well, referring a little bit and going past all of the rookies one by one. And I don't think any of us had really expected such a result. Of course, the Racing Bull seems to be a decent car, but in the end, you know, he set a better performance there compared to his teammate. I mean, Lawson was also not didn't make it out of Q2, and Olli Biermann, it's quite a performance compared to what Esteban Ocon was able to set, because he didn't even make it out of Q1. And you know, that Haas is very difficult to, by the way, great livery. I really, really loved that.
That was not a bad livery, yeah.
For Japan.
Yeah.
And I like the Red Bull livery too.
Me
but
too.
It was difficult to tell the, I would even say the racing bulls look more like Red Bulls than the Red Bulls themselves. But maybe they did, I don't know, maybe they did that to camouflage the Tsunoda loss and change. In any way, the Haas is difficult to make your mind up about, because in Australia they were horrendously slow, and then they scored a P5 and a P10 for, of course, you know, with a couple of disqualifications there, but very decent point haul for them in China. And then, you know, it's just difficult to make out what how competitive that car is. But then to have such a difference in performance between Biermann and Ocon, yeah, I was quite surprised with that, and definitely want to applaud that performance by Olli Biermann, because of course he did have a couple of races last year. I think he had three races last year, but that still, you know, that as a rookie, great results, both him and Hajar.
What a heartwarming moment to see his father at the end, and he's just so excited, and he's visibly expressing himself over how excited he is to see Olli get it to finish 10th overall. And I just thought that was amazing. And one other interesting thing as well when it comes to Isaac is that he was also, like, throughout qualifying for the first at least Q1 session, he had an issue with his belt, and it was causing a lot of complications. So that's another thing, is that he had
a lot of radio
messages. So he was expressing that he wasn't able to focus. Whatever the issue was something that was affecting him, and he still managed to put it out there. So that's a fantastic result for him.
Yeah, I think he still had an incident on radio that was broadcast live, where he said to his engineer that he was apologizing in advance if it hindered them in qualifying, and then he pulled that result. I don't think he has anything to be sorry for.
Definitely not.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, talking a little bit about the step from qualifying to the race, I didn't know exactly what to expect with the Red Bull ahead of the McLarens on the grid, and I was somewhat expecting that, you know, with two McLarens, with being able to split the strategy, that over a whole race distance they would outperform the Red Bull relatively easily, I was expecting, but that didn't happen. So let's talk a little bit about the race and your expectations. What did you think ahead of the race before, I don't know at what time? I think, Sam, you didn't watch the race live. You watched it slightly later. Savannah, I suppose you watched it live.
I did. I think on my end, I was up bright and early with a cup of coffee, but there was something like a gut feeling, like knowing Suzuka for its safety cars and possible DNFs. I mean, I think we saw three DNFs last year from three different teams, and if I remember correctly, Ricciardo was one of them. And all three of those DNFs that happened were also not classified, so they didn't even get to the distance required in terms of actually completing a certain part of the race. I did applaud Verstappen on pointing his nose quite sharply towards Lando Norris's McLaren on that starting grid after their formation lap, and I guess Norris had the same idea by kind of giving it back to him. But I definitely think, even though Norris had a quicker reaction time than Verstappen, Verstappen is one of those people who, when he's got his head locked in on a situation, if you give him a hand, he's going to take the whole arm. And that's exactly what he did going into turn one. And I applaud him for that, because like he was complaining of his tires not having any grip and not being able to maneuver the car the way he wanted to, quite early on in the race, it was around about lap 3 or 4 that he came on radio and mentioned that his upshifts weren't actually firing the way they needed to. And it wasn't anything to panic about, because he seemed quite calm when he mentioned it. It was just kind of like, hey, it's still happening. Can we please try and sort it out? And literally less than 2-3 minutes later, his engineer was back on radio saying, don't worry, in 2 laps, they should be fine. So I think there's the confidence in Red Bull hasn't been broken, even though I think they're on their toes because of McLaren being where they are currently. But like Norris said in a interview after the race, he mentioned it's this game of cat and mouse, or being chased or being the chaser. So he said I think anybody right in front with clean air and everything like that is a lot more comfortable, but obviously they still have to watch those rear mirrors for anything that's happening behind them, because things can happen at any given time. So I think Verstappen did what he needed to do today to prove that he's only gotten where he's gotten because of how he thinks, how he controls his car, and his relationship with his team. So I think it's a full dynamic of Red Bull where he's at home, if that's the right sort of term to put it in. Whereas, like Norris mentioned in this interview that I'm referencing, being the person that is usually being chased, you really have to know the territory well in order to defend it. And Max knows that, where he's led multiple races back-to-back, won multiple races back-to-back, and championships back-to-back. Where Norris says himself and his teammate Piastri are in new waters, being the people that are being the ones being chased. So I think Verstappen just gave his A-class game today in completing where he completed and also qualifying the way he did. So again, hats off to him, the team, and everybody that it was involved in making that happen.
I think that his win, definitely the qualifying session, secured a really strong position for him to be in. However, I would also say that it was a race where most of these drivers were driving flat out for a large portion of it. But at the same time, I think that he there's no doubt about the fact that he had a fantastic drive. But I think that another large element to his win was the lack of in my opinion, I felt that there just wasn't a strong enough competitiveness coming out of McLaren strategically on a few factors. And one of them being, number one, I felt that the pit stop strategy initially did not make sense. To pit him at the exact same time as Max was questionable. The second thing that I would say is that when you have two drivers, and Anton, you mentioned this very briefly in the beginning here, was splitting the strategy. And I just did not see that. I did not see an effective way to split the strategy itself and be able to maximize, I keep using the word maximize, of course, but to really be able to take advantage of a situation where you have the fastest car, you have two of the best drivers on the grid, and you have a situation where you could truly capitalize upon that. I would say the other thing too that was questionable in terms of strategy was towards the end, it was very clear in the last 10 to 15 laps that Oscar had more pace in the car. For what reason they decided to keep him back and not at least give a shot to go at Max, I question that. But I also think that may play a part in the way that they identify their drivers at this current time, where there isn't necessarily, they're very vocal about the fact that they don't have a number one driver. In fact, they would much rather have both drivers be classified as number one. And whether or not this strategy works long term, we'll see. But this is an example of a situation where maybe not necessarily, or maybe just tuning into the fact that you are in a position where Lando clearly doesn't have the full pace to be able to go after Max and to compete for that win. And instead you see an opportunity and to be able to truly capitalize on it. I think that if there are situations, strategical situations or questionable decisions that McLaren makes in the future of this season itself, when it comes to Max being ahead of them, when it comes to Red Bull in general, or any team that may be able to be strong during that race weekend, these are the things that are going to potentially cost them. And we saw examples and reflections of this last year in some of the strategical decisions they had, where they had all the cards on the table and all the opportunity in their hands, and yet they made decisions that cost them in certain ways. So my concern looking ahead is whether or not all of these factors are going to translate into this season and give them a lot of potential challenges. I think that, again, Max had a fantastic weekend. There's no doubt about it. But at the same time, I mean, you have to... I didn't see the aggressiveness. I didn't see the pace. I didn't see the smart strategical decisions. And it is concerning because you can't even give a centimeter to Red Bull, or especially Max Verstappen, because he will take advantage of it as he should. And so, yeah, I think that a lot of things hopefully that McLaren can go back and think about when it comes to truly being competitive and wanting to be at the top, whether or not it's the World Championship or whether it's the Constructors this year. Clearly they are strong in the Constructors, but when it comes to the Drivers' Championship, I would like to see what's really going to unfold. And I think it will be very interesting between those two drivers.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view, because actually McLaren for a long time last year didn't want to express how they really looked at their drivers. But I do agree with you that this definitely, they laid their cards on the table this time, because I think the only risk with letting Piastri go after Verstappen would have been that Piastri actually did manage to overtake Verstappen, and you know, there would have been a bigger gap between Piastri and Norris in the driver standing, because other than that, I couldn't really see any reason not to do it either, because, you know, like they were saying on the broadcast, you know, if it wouldn't have worked out, you can still switch Piastri and Norris back. So it was, I think, altogether, if you put all the points in sequence, I think it's both things that you guys were saying, plus another factor. But yeah, Savannah, you're right. I think the psychological part of, you know, knowing what it is to fight for not only race wins, but to fight for a lead in a championship, and just the pressure that comes with driving up front, that's definitely a factor that plays a huge role. What you were saying, Samantha, the strategies not being split, not from the beginning. I was, just to go into that a little bit more, I was really, you know, if you look at some of the other strategies that were, of course, you know, take for example, Doohan. He started on softs, and, you know, I think that from practice sessions, we all learned that, you know, we were using the hardest range of tires, and it seemed that they really looked quite good in terms of degradation, not just in the race, but also already in practice sessions. I think we were able to see that, which meant that, you know, a strategy like such as that Doohan took with starting on softs and doing the second stint on hards, you know, you get a huge advantage off the line. You can, you're quicker. I mean, that would have been something that Norris, of course, I understand that with hindsight, it's super easy to say these things. But I also think that, you know, beforehand, you know that if you're not splitting the strategies, you're just going to, and I mean, you could really see that the two McLarens were basically just going, yeah, on exactly the same dynamic through the race, and yeah, perhaps Piastri was a little bit faster, but in the end, yeah, it didn't really matter too much. And Verstappen pitting and Norris pitting at the same lap, I mean, I think Norris himself should have, I suppose the team told him, I haven't listened to the team radios, but I reckon that He was planning to do the pit stop, and then actually Verstappen did the same stop in the same lap, but him seeing Verstappen ahead of him pitting, he should have decided himself to stay out, because, you know, I think the tires definitely, we heard on the radios that his tires were good. You could see from several other drivers, you know, Antonelli did 31 laps on the mediums, and Sainz did 33. I think Lawson did too. So, you know, the tires would have held on. And at that point, you already had Piastri, who tried to go for the undercut, which also didn't work, but, you know, at least try something else. And I do think that one other factor played a role, and that plays a little bit into the advantage of Red Bull. And of course, I definitely don't want to denigrate the win of Verstappen. I mean, as I said in the beginning of the episode, I felt it was really a masterclass. But I do think that, you know, being able to start from pole and, you know, making sure that you are still in the lead after one lap, and from then onward just driving in clean air, does make a huge difference. I mean, I think a good example of that was the sprint race in China, where Hamilton had the same. I don't think anybody expected Hamilton there to take the win, but he did, and mostly because of that pole position. And I just think that in a track where, I mean, you know, in the end, Suzuka, you do need downforce. It's quite important, especially in that first sector, which has a lot of twists and turns, but also in the chicane. I mean, I have a feeling that you really lose a lot more downforce this season than they did last season. I think, you know, with the regulations not changing too much, of course, the teams are also looking to disturb the air behind their car, and they're getting better at it. And you can see that on track. So I do think that, and that's why I reference to not a lot of overtakes at the front of the grid during the first three races. And I think that's going to be a trend for the rest of the season, which, you know, increases the importance of qualifying, and you know, those that are good at qualifying, which is also why, one of the reasons why I expect Hamilton really to have a tough season, because Leclerc, you know, we've seen it this weekend again, but I think he also maximized. I don't think the Ferraris are as good as I would even say all three of us hoped for at the beginning of this season. And then, you know, if it's not, then yeah, Leclerc just seems to be a little bit ahead of Hamilton. We've seen Hamilton have trouble with Mercedes as well during qualifying. I think he has great race pace. I think he did he was one of the few that went for an alternative strategy. So I'm definitely applauding that. But yeah, other than that, I do think it's, I don't want to just say that after one race where there were hardly any overtakes. I mean, of course, you're going to have a few of these races during a season, so there's nothing wrong with that. But a trend starts to appear, and I am afraid that this season is not going to have as many overtakes as we would like to see. But then again, you know, it might still be, I mean, we've had three different race winners already, and four actually if you count the sprint weekend as well. So, you know, that means that perhaps, you know, the Saturday is going to be super extra exciting this year.
Yeah, you never know, right? I would say one other thing to just mention when it comes to the race is Kimi Antonelli, 18 years old, youngest driver now breaking the record to lead an F1 race and set the fastest lap.
Yeah.
So quite impressive once again for the rookie, and I think a pretty solid result for him as well. Of course, he came on the radio at one point, and he was some of his radio messages were quite funny, but I mean,
I'm giving it all, my mate.
Yeah, that's exactly the one I was thinking of.
And by the way, actually, you mentioned there that his fastest lap point, I saw actually in the post-race show of the F1 TV episode that they actually, where they gave a list of the points scored during this Grand Prix, and they actually there listed him having 9 points. They added that point for fastest lap, which they're actually not counting this year. So that was a little error on F1 TV's side.
Isn't that funny? I mean, just it's incredible. 18 years old and to be in F1 and competitive in F1 like that. I just it boggles my brain. But I couldn't imagine seeing him in 10 years from now. He's only 18 at 28 years old. I mean, it's incredible. So I would say that's one thing definitely to mention as well from the race. And speaking of radios, what were we thinking about Alex Albon and his communication back and forth to his engineer? It was a little bit fiery, no?
Yeah, I know. When I saw the little stars popping up on scene, I was going, well, here comes a fine of some sort. But yeah, just to finish off your thought on Antonelli, yeah, no, 18 years old and leading a F1 race is actually insane. I literally sat thinking while I was watching him take that P1 position and going, I only got my driver's license, my normal car driver's license, when I was halfway to 20 years old. What am I doing with my life? And I was like, he's barely finished high school and leading an F1 race, living the dream. But no, coming back to Albon's little incident, if you want to call it that, in saying a few colourful words on broadcasted radio with transcript, I'm enjoying seeing Albon's confidence that's come out this year. And I think we've touched on it before, where we've said he's never had teammates on the calibre of what Sainz has had. He's had Sargent and...
Well, he had Verstappen.
Yes.
Yes, he had Verstappen, but unfortunately...
No, well, go on. That's
a bit of a debate for another day. But yeah, no, I think where he's almost been now the primary leader for a team, and he's now suddenly scoring points. He's scored points in all three races for the season so far. His confidence has been boosted, I think, tenfold, and I'm enjoying it. Maybe it might need to be dialed down a little bit in terms of saving them a little bit of money that they need to keep their team intact, instead of using, like I say, colourful language on broadcasted radio. It's easier to have that sort of fiery or overly fiery conversation, possibly on debriefings and that sort of thing, where it's not screened necessarily, or as openly at least. But yeah, the confidence level that I'm seeing in Albon, I can only imagine is going to grow from here, especially if he's already got his teammate helping him in situations like we saw in Australia, where Sainz ultimately made his call to say, get him in the pits. He needs to pit for new tyres for the weather conditions like now. And he listened. So I think the dynamic between that duo and the team itself is really working well, like we've said in the past.
All right, so I think, as always, it's that time to take a look at our results. I am not looking forward to that part, but what I am looking forward to is hearing how many players we had this weekend. So, Anton, how many were a part of the Suzuka weekend?
So, we saw that, you know, we started with the game this season having 1,826 players for Australia. Then we had a bit of a drop, which actually is a natural tendency for the game, that we have a lot of players for the first race of the season. We had 1,512 for China, and this weekend we had 1,583. So we grew with just a couple of players for this weekend.
Very nice. Moving up.
Steady steps.
Exactly. So, you know, just to determine which one of you is going to start with the quiz later on, I'm going to ask both of you, how many people do you think that predicted a correct podium with Verstappen, Norris and Piastri out of those 1,583 players?
Ooh, I am going to say not a lot. I'm going to say 24.
I'm going to go 63.
Ooh, well, Sam, you're quite close to the right answer. It was 30 people, slightly more, wow. So six off. So, yeah, 60 was just a bit too high, but all in all, not bad guesses. Do you have enough confidence to also take a guess at the average score for this weekend?
Okay, well, might as well. Let's say the average score I'm gonna go with is 38.
And I'm going to go with 34.
Okay, not far off, actually. And again, Sam, you're closest. It was 40.7. decent average score. also yeah. not extremely high, but I guess you know, a lot of people had the McLarens on the podium, and they did finish on the podium, so I guess that delivered quite a decent point haul for most people. Let's see if it also did for us. But yeah, Sam, as you were saying, you're not really looking forward to that part.
Not at all.
Neither have I.
Well, you and I had similar picks.
Yeah,
as we typically seem
to
do.
Well, we'll get to it. Yeah, we will get to it. Actually, all three of us, we were not that far apart. But let's look at those that actually had great weekends. And I'm starting with somebody special to the extent that we've already seen him twice on a podium, and that is actually a new record, because we've had people thus far in the game that have made it to the podium in two different weekends. But Arnošt Krenovský from Czech Republic made it to the podium now on three separate occasions, scoring 87 points, so wow. He's on P3. And he was actually, the previous two times that he was on a podium, he actually won. He won the Brazil 2023 weekend, and he also won the Qatar 2023 weekend. So I don't know what to say. I mean, I would wish that I would be on the podium three times in my own game, but
don't we all?
Unfortunately, I haven't been at all. So, yeah.
That's a fantastic result. And also, I mean, this wasn't a prediction that we could have assumed, to be honest. I clearly, with the result of the amount of people that had a correct podium, I think that's a clear indication that if you chose the podium that you did, it was definitely rare. So hats off to that result.
Definitely.
Yeah, I guess that, you know, if you're gonna go for Verstappen win, it's quite logical to put the other two McLaren drivers on the podium as well. But I was somewhat surprised with 30 correct podium guesses, but let's move on to the second step on the podium, and that was Charles Rocher from Antigua and Barbuda, and that's actually the first time that somebody from that island nation makes it to the podium in Forecast F1. So congratulations to Charles, and
nice.
He scored 93 points. So also not a bad score at all, given that, you know, there's 101 points on the table. So congratulations to Charles, and that means that we get to our winner of this weekend, who comes from New Zealand, and Lucas Wilkinson scored 94 points, and he's the first winner in the game from New Zealand. Actually, New Zealand previously scored a P2 as highest position, but Lucas is the first winner from New Zealand, so congratulations.
Wow, congratulations. Very nice.
Yeah, well done.
Yes, yeah, so actually looking at the rest of the top 20, it's the first time that somebody from Libya makes it to P8. Hamid Al-Sharif makes it to P8, so that's also great result.
Very
there
cool.
For him. And I'm looking at things now, and I doubt that we've also ever had such a high score from somebody from Cyprus, because we have Itai Grimberg from Cyprus on P17, and I'm thinking that that's probably also the highest score ever for somebody from that country. And I'm also thinking that probably P16, Eli Malik from Ghana, is probably also the highest score for Ghana ever, because we've had very few players. But these things I haven't really seriously checked, so I need to look that up. But I do think that that those are high scores for those countries as well. So a couple of high scores there. But actually, looking at the high scores overall, Lucas Wilkinson slots in at P4 worldwide. So if we look at all the high scores from the first three races, but his score, of course, 94 points is the highest score for a non-sprint weekend. And it's actually, there's five different people from today's race that make it to the top 20 in the worldwide high score. So that's Lucas Wilkinson and Charles and Arnošt, and then also our P4 from Bosnia-Herzegovina, that's Nesla Sengic, and from the Netherlands, Dane van der Ven. And all the other high scores in the worldwide high scores are from the Chinese sprint weekend. And there's only one score in Oceania left from the continental high scores, that is from the race in Australia. But talking about all these different countries, I guess it's time for you girls to guess from which countries we had the most amount of players. So let's see how much attention you've been paying in the previous weekends to see if you can guess those, because they're also the current top three of countries. So let's see if you, Sam, Savannah, who are one, two, and three?
Okay, who wants to start? Savannah, you want to go first?
I'm going to be second. Go first.
I'm trying to play.
I guess we can all guess P1, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to play it safe and say Kenya.
Big surprise. No, that's right. But who are P2 and P3?
Ooh. I remember seeing somewhere that Mexico was possibly in the mix. I could be very wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Mexico is on P3. So mm-hmm. so actually, Sam, that leaves you to guess P2.
Spain, I am going to go with.
Okay, ooh. Good. You have been paying attention. So that's the three countries in the top, the top three. That's Kenya, Spain, and Mexico. They had 108, 92, and 87 players this weekend. And if we look at the rest of the top 10 and accumulated scores for countries, Argentina is making up a couple of places. Of course, they won in the previous two seasons. So, they've got some room to still make up. But they move up to P5. They were previously on P7, and they switched places with Great Britain, who were on P5, moving down to P7. Well, I think India is right in between their P6. Anyway, those are the movements in the top 10. And then looking at the country that has gained most places, I'm figuring that out right now as we speak, and I think it is Antigua and Barbuda, with 23 places gained. So, you know, that shows, I mean, I always have, there's always a lot of people that ask me why we look at the countries with accumulated scores, because it simply means that, you know, more players, more points, and you end up higher in the ranking. But if we would look at highest average score, then I would take let's take last season as an example, where we had I think we had one player from Trinidad and Tobago who made one prediction with a very high score and would have set the highest average score for Trinidad, and they would have been on P1 for the whole season with an unbeatable high score or average score. So that's why we don't look at average scores so much. We look mostly at accumulated scores, and you know, it's also a good way. I really rely on all of you guys to find new players for me for the game. So, you know, if you want to do well as a country, then find as many people as you can. And I think it's quite obvious that Kenya is a great example. They didn't have too many players if we go 1 year back, but then during the summer break, there were a couple of chat groups on WhatsApp, actually, where there's a lot of Kenyan people who all started to play and who all, you know, rallied themselves up to, you know, really do well. So and they're on top of the list now, and I think they're going to be unbeatable for this year, unless, you know, there's some other hubs of places that we can find a lot of players from. Actually, Bolivia last weekend was a great example, because they only had like two or three people in the game, but there was a community of Bolivians that joined, and they're now actually in the top 20, and they're moving up as well. So find as many people from your country to play to score as many points for your country as you possibly can. But it's just, you know, this is an example that it's not just only about number of players. If somebody from a place where there's not too many players from, like in this case Antigua and Barbuda, you know, if you finish on the podium and score 93 points, all of a sudden you can move up a lot in the ranking too. So, you know, there are several different ways to approach this. It's either with numbers or with very, very accurate predictions.
Absolutely.
So I think that it's also time to look at some of the scores of the collaborations that we have with some of the F1 merchandise shops. So we move all the way to Manila. Actually, that's not even that far from Suzuka, if you think about it. We had a podium for the pre-game motor shop merchandise, and we as we know, we there are going to be prizes given away to everybody that makes it to the podium on each separate weekend. So I'm going to take a shot at pronouncing some Filipino names. And on P1, we had Jezebela Caballero with 69.3 points. We had John Pilapil with 66.5 on P2. And the third step of the podium went to Lucy Inales. And that was a place with 56.3 points. So congratulations to them. They all get a voucher. And not only that, they move up in the ranking as well. So, you know, there's some prizes, some giveaways as well for those that do well in the whole season. And not only in the whole season, there's already prizes given away at the summer break. So good luck to everyone there in that competition. We moved to Lebanon, to Beirut, the DRS lane. And we had there on P1... Actually, that was also a P6 finish worldwide with 83 points. So a very decent finish. Unfortunately, just not enough points to also make it into the worldwide high scores top 20. But Eli Salim did very, very well. So congratulations. That's a $10 voucher for the DRS lane shop.
Very nice.
Yeah, well done.
Very nice indeed. And that brings us to the overall competition. And, you know, we've only had three races yet, but there's already some very interesting movements there. Let's go back to who were on the first three spots after the Chinese Grand Prix. And we had on P3, we had from Italy, we had Filippo Morelli. And he only scored 29.8 points this weekend, not a whole lot. And he drops to P13, so no longer in the top three. And the same is true for your fellow countryman, Savannah James Cottrane, who was on P2, scored 35.1 nice. And drops to P6. Ah, you're happy that he drops and he's no longer in the top three.
Savannah. Yeah. for a little bit, because I need to like catch up from 719. I'm all the way down there. So if it plays in my favor, let's go.
That's a good one. I now that you mention that, actually, I read out some wrong positions last podcast, so those who have been paying attention, actually what I mentioned last time wasn't completely correct, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, there's no longer two Canadians on the podium. We will see if there's still a Canadian leading this competition, but let's look first at those that replaced P3 and P2 in the game. On P3 we now have William Kaguna, who has been actually in the top five since the first race, so that's very consistent. He scored 44.3 points. And our Kenyan friend came from P4 actually, and I think he was on P3 after the first race. Let me actually go back in my notes to Australia to see whether that is indeed correct. Yeah, he was on P2 even, because he finished on P2 on the podium for the Australian Grand Prix with 62 points. So actually, he goes from P2 to P4 and now is back on P3. So it seems to be a season contender. And on P2, we have somebody coming in from P8, scoring 57 points. And that's Kashish Aman from India. So from P8 to P2. And that means we get to P1. And Jack Woods is still on P1. He scored 42.8 points. And with that, he's able to keep his lead. He's now 8.5 points ahead of P2. That lead was, I think it was a little bit bigger last time out, but Kashish Aman is on 179.3 total points, and Jack now has 187.5, so that's 8.2 points difference rather than the 8.5 that I was mentioning. But still a long season ahead, so a lot of things that can happen. But yeah, I wish Jack the best of luck.
Yeah, to Jack, Kashish and William, well done.
All right, well, I think that only leaves us, before we go to the quiz, we need to look at our scores.
Do we?
Perhaps we should skip this part. But then again, like I was saying, I read out some wrong standings last time. So I guess in order to correct those, we might as well have a look at our scores. And let's look at Samantha first. It's always what were you going to say, Savannah?
This is always the part of our recording session for the podcast that I dread, because I can kick myself after doing some predictions. Like, I've done worse this week than what I did in China. And that's not the slope that I need. I need an upward slope for the next few races. Because unfortunately, my sister is still beating me overall by almost 100 positions in the standings.
No, I saw that. Yeah, that's correct. Well, actually, if we look at all of us, we all went with P1, P2 for Norris and Piastri. So that part's all the same. Samantha, what was your P3 this weekend out?
It was Max.
Yeah, it was indeed. Did you see how many points you scored?
Yes, Anton, I saw how many points I scored. I'm not happy with my result. All I have is to, you know.
But there's no reason to hide it, because you actually outscored both me and Savannah, oh, Sam. So.
Well, let me tell you, it's not a great result regardless. Although I will say this, had possibly the McLarens picked up a little bit, I mean, it could have been a fantastic result for the three of us.
Oh, yeah.
But not the case.
Exactly. not just for the three of us, I think.
For many.
I think, you know, the whole thing would have looked very different. But well, you scored 39.8, and that got you a P744 for the weekend.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's still on the better half of it, considering we had 1,583 people. So not too shabby either.
No.
You were actually placed P260 in the standings. I don't know what I read out last time. Actually, if you want to, I can go back to that. And but it was wrong, that I do remember. I think I said that you were on P... I'm looking at it here. My notes are not too clear. That's one of the issues. Like, I don't know if I've written it down on the same day, I can read them back. But
you know, it's bad when you can't even read your own notes.
It's kind of tough. Yeah, let's just not go back. But you were on P260 actually. You move down a couple of places. Actually, 42
Shocking.
Places. So you're now on P302.
Well, I mean, it's fine. I'm just going to. Consider this weekend as nothing but maybe you know, not a reflection of the rest of the season. I feel like we'll just look ahead to the race in Bahrain at this point.
Yeah, well, actually, you know what's interesting, it's Savannah, you know, you scored fewer points than Samantha, but you were a bit further back in the standings. You're with all the people that score low points on every weekend.
Yeah.
So you actually went up in the ranking.
I'm so glad that happened, to hear those words come out of your mouth, Anton. Wow.
You went from P, and you were actually on a very interesting position. I don't know how I've missed that with last podcast, but you were on P666 actually.
Yeah, I saw that. Was I jinxed for this race?
No, you moved up for to P613 actually. So, you know,
thank goodness.
Not bad. You went with a third podium place for who?
I'm representing him with my racing number this year in the game, Charles Leclerc.
That's right, actually, yeah. So you went with Norris, Piastri, Leclerc. You scored 35 points. You were P1,114. I do got to say, though, you had Hajar on the correct spot. You had him on P8. So you scored those 4 points. Actually, I had him on P9, so I scored 2 points. But, that didn't really, well, I mean, it got you 4 out of your 35 points. Myself, I scored 37.1, so right in between both of your scores. Finished P944 for the weekend. I went with the podium of Norris, Piastri, Russell. I just thought that, you know, Russell consistently making it to the third step would do that again, but he didn't. I was P104, sorry. I was saying that wrong. I wish I was P100 something. I was P445 and I moved down to P491. So that's how we are now in the rankings. 302 for Sam, 491 for me, and 613 for you, Savannah. What were you about to ask?
I think earlier on you might have mistaken me for my sister, because on the overall rankings, she's sitting 613th. I'm 719th, so that's okay.
Is that right? I was already somewhat confused how you moved up so much.
No, it's my sister. The youngest sister.
Yeah, okay, I'm looking at it right now. So you're 719. I'm sorry to have almost mixed that up with with over 100 positions. So, we can conclude that good with scores.
One can only hope that next week it's a turnaround for me.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Well, I'm just checking now if you're the only one, but I think I'm still ahead of my sisters, actually. So at least I got that going for myself. But I am. But they both outscored me this weekend. So so much for the family battles. Better watch out. Yeah, I will watch out for certain. All right, I think enough about our scores because. I think we can conclude that there's a lot of room for improvement, although we'll talk about that for a little bit. I mean, we got only 1 week to go to Bahrain, and that's a track where, you know, we've done season testing, although it seems to be all a little bit warmer on track next week than it was during testing sessions. But I think in that regard, it's a track that all the drivers know a little bit better, even the rookies, although I'm getting ahead of myself. Of course, we're going to play the quiz first.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And we're currently sitting 1-1.
That's right. It's 1-1, and it's going to be Sam actually to kick it off. And I'm just, I'm putting my glasses on. I'm finding a pen, and, we're going to kick it off. And Sam, how many people had Verstappen on P1? What do you think? 1,583 players.
I'm going to say 28.
I'm going to say 14.
Okay, neither of you are awake, I think, because we just established that there was 30 people that had a correct podium prediction.
Right. Oh, right. But I was actually thinking, the worst part about that is I was factoring that in, and I was thinking about it being that no one would have Lando and Piastri in the same spot, so therefore the podium would mean for all three of them to be correct. So that's why I actually went down slightly. That was my train of thought. However, Anton, if you're going to go that route. You know what? Like I said, I've already clearly this weekend has not been a good one for me when it comes to predictions. But Anton, why don't you tell us how many it was with Max?
Yeah, well, still, I mean, you get the point because it was 124. 28 is more than 14. So you're close. But yeah, time to wake up, girls.
Both Renates are having a bit of a blonde moment.
Yeah, no, that's all right. It can happen. Maybe it's just some rage bait for our listeners. But we go to Norris on P2, Savannah.
Oh, I'm going to go with 100 and... I'm going to stick with the fours, so I'm going to say 142 people.
Okay, I'm going to do 160.
Well, it's indeed more. It's actually quite a bit more. It's even more than double of what you guessed, Sam. It's 340, so it's double plus 20. But that does mean you get another point, and it does mean you're next up for Piastri on P3.
Alrighty, well, let's keep the numbers high, and I'm going to stick to 183.
I'm going to go slightly higher and say 237.
I only called the 37 part. Did you say 137, or what did you say?
237.
237, all right, that gets you the point, because that means you're only 40 away. It was 277.
Ooh, that's a big
finally number on the board.
Yeah, decent amount of people that went with Piastri on that P3 spot, which means we get to the first Ferrari. We didn't talk about him that much. Savannah, you had him on P3, but he finished on P4. It's Charles Leclerc, and it's Savannah that goes first with guessing.
Well, since I missed out, unfortunately, in his placement, I'm still going to go with quite a few people and say around about 56.
Okay, I'm going to go with 67.
It's a lot more than both of that.
Wow.
Yeah, you can add those two numbers and it's still a lot more. It's 331 people.
Oh my word.
Big number.
Okay.
Big number.
Means we're at 3-1 for Sam, and We're moving to Russell, the first Mercedes to finish. And Samantha, you're the first to take a guess at it.
Okay. Well, I mean, we're doing some big numbers in terms of guesses here, but I guess I'll increase my predictions. And let's go with 211.
I'm going to go with 205.
Well, the 211 was going to be very, very, very tough to beat because it's only two away from the right answer. It's it's 213.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Last one, Sam.
Okay.
Well, you were both very close, but that's another point for Sam. And you take the lead. I'm not used to saying this, but... we go to the other Mercedes. That's Antonelli, Savannah. That one's yours.
I'm going to say, a comfortable 400 and... No, actually lower. What am I thinking? I'm going to stick to the four still, though, and say 114 people.
Okay. I'm going to go with 176.
Well, you started out very good already, Sam, with the podium guesses and the average guesses, and you're consistently performing in this weekend because you're very close to the right answer again. You're only 10 away. It was 166.
Ooh, okay.
Wow.
Not too shabby.
So that's 5-1. That means, Savannah, you got to get the next couple of... you've got to get them all right in order to draw.
Yep.
So... And then I guess if we draw, we haven't decided yet on what's going to happen when that happens this season. So you either get split points or
we might have to do a bonus question, yeah. Because ultimately one anthem's got to play at the end of the podcast, doesn't it?
maybe for I'm thinking for the next couple of races, I might just prepare a bonus question and
sounds good.
We're gonna do the bonus question regardless.
Yeah.
But it only counts if it's a draw. And if it's not a draw, then we'll just ask the bonus question. But it will be stuff like, okay, for example, now we first had Tsunoda and a Red Bull. Like, how many people how many people went with a Tsunoda win? Okay, I think that's actually a good one. We're going to do that one. We're going to run that one at the end. I didn't prepare that. I'm looking it up right now.
okay.
But I think that's...
I know of at least one person who went with a Tsunoda win, so...
Yeah, if you...
So
if,
do
if,
I.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you paid attention in our chat group, then both of you know at least one person. But all right, we'll get to the Tsunoda one after we finish. Let's first see if it ends up in a draw because, it's 5-1. Sam, Hamilton, P7.
Hamilton, P7.
Did we do Hedger?
Sorry,
I'm looking at qualifying notes here. Apologies. Go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say, overtook Isaac right at the very
Hedger.
End, too.
Yeah, he did.
That's about...
But let's... Okay, so
yeah,
Hamilton...
That was one of the few overtakes.
Yeah. I'm going to go with... I am going to say 192.
And I'm going to go with 183.
Okay, this was competitive, actually. This is nice, Savannah. You are getting the point. It was 178, so that means you're only 5 away. Sam, you were 14 away. So,
ooh, we're getting close.
That makes it nice. We're gonna get an exciting 3 last rounds. And first, of course, Isaac Hajar on P8, and that one's for Savannah first.
Okay. Well, I know that I got it correct, so there's a little hint for you, Sam, if that helps. But I'm gonna go with 31 people.
Okay, I'm gonna go into
all
the...
All right, I'm writing down 30. Sorry, yeah. I was writing around 30 plus Savannah.
Hopefully,
yeah.
You can read that writing this time, Anton. I'm gonna go with 87.
People, pay attention. It's one of the few jokes that Sam makes about me, rather than the other way around.
He says few, but I don't know.
I didn't catch that.
You didn't catch the number, sorry?
No, seriously, I didn't.
Okay.
No. 87 means you won it, Sam, because it was 102. So it makes it 6-2. But we're going to run the other two questions plus the bonus question. So P9 album, that one's for you, Sam. Oh, did I say actually the amount of people that had Hajar on P8? It was 102
You
people.
Did say that. You did say that. I think...
No, it's actually quite a lot of... It's just a lot of people.
It is quite a lot of people.
It is. Yeah, a lot of confidence in the rookie. I think we... you know what? It's great. I think I had him in my top 10 as well. So I'd actually be interested to know how many...
I think
many,
you had him on 10th.
Yeah, and I'd be interested to know how many people in general had him in the top 10. Or even just...
Ooh,
here's a stat
okay,
for next...
Nice. I'm going to...
For next...
No. I will look it up.
Well, I was...
You make your own question. So
I was also going to say...
How many do you think?
I
have the number already.
How many? Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to say...
Yeah, you speak, I count.
All right. Let's go with 230.
I'm going to take a wild guess and go it's higher, and I'm going to go like 392.
Yeah, I think, you know, with logical deduction, if 102 people already have him on P8, there's going to be even more that have him on P9 and P10. So it's not just going to be double, it's going to be a lot more than that. It was, well, incredibly, it was over one third of all the people playing. It was 540 people.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is
very cool.
540. That's really a lot. Do you have any other bonus questions that you have in mind?
Well, just actually, I was going to say to you, what would be interesting in general is to see, because obviously we have a year where there is a significant amount of rookies we've seen in a very long time. How many people had rookies as a whole in their top 10? That would be interesting. Because it's also playing a part into the confidence of the drivers.
Yeah, that's going to be slightly tougher because I can look that all up, but then I need to.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to count people, not amount of rookies predicted. So it's going to have to be mutually exclusive. Because if one is already predicted by somebody, then wait, I might be able to. It's this one's a little bit tougher.
Well, here's what I would say. You could always put that in for next week, and for next week's picks for Bahrain,
giving me work to do.
We come out and see exactly how many people chose the rookies, because I think that also after these last several races we've seen.
Okay, but we can you know, I have an idea to make this sort of work.
Okay.
Although I would first like you to still take a guess, because you know Behrman's going to be still a guess for P10. So let's just finish this off, and then we'll do it per rookie. All right, and we already know that there's 540 people that went with Hajar in their predictions. But let's first do Albon on P9. Sam, that one's for you.
Okay, let's go with 201.
And I'm going to go with 197.
Okay, that means that Sam, you're only 74 apart from the right answer, and you're closer because it's 275, and that means that's another point for you. And then let's do Behrman on P10, and that one's for Savannah to guess.
I think I'm gonna go with 106.
Okay, I am gonna go low here. I'm going to say 54.
Whoa, very close to the right answer. It was 52.
Ooh, okay. Why couldn't I have done this during the actual
Savannah,
race?
I'm sorry to. Yeah, but I was gonna say. I mean, this is a tough one to take on the chin. It's 8-2.
Yeah, it's not my week. On all fronts, my sister's beating me, I'm losing the quiz, but we can only come back stronger.
Might as well quit.
Oh, gee.
No.
Oh,
I didn't really mean that.
Look, you never give up, right?
No.
What is, it's...
No, of course
they
not.
They said on the radio, oh my goodness, I think Christian had said something, Horner had said something to Max on the radio about never giving up this weekend. And and Max said, yes, we always keep pushing, which of course, I mean, is one of the most common phrases that all the drivers use. We keep pushing. But just Horner's advice,
yeah,
I guess,
it's
in
a
some
thing
element. Never give up. Look at what
yeah,
Max
exactly.
did this weekend. So
exactly. No, I'm thinking at the slogan of one of the two of the McLaren posts that they've done on social media, where it was "Never stop racing." So let's just continue the race.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, let's then also continue the quiz. We're going to do the bonus one. So let's get to the first bonus question. That would have been the bonus question if you guys would have tied, which you didn't, but I'm still going to ask it. Tsunoda, P1. So both of you know that Ajit went with that, as we have sort of established from the chat. But besides Ajit, how many other people went with a Tsunoda win? Actually, I want to say there was somebody additionally that told me or told in another chat group, well, I shouldn't name names, but he said he was going to go with a Tsunoda win, and then he changed it, I think, like 5 minutes before deadline. But how many people kept Tsunoda on P1 for this weekend?
Sam, you want to go first?
Sure. I am honestly going to say nobody. I'm going to say Ajit was the only one that decided to choose Tsunoda as the race winner.
I'm going to go with two people.
Yeah, there was actually eight people.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Quite a few.
That's actually really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did not expect that, clearly.
It is interesting. So we're going to do a couple of the other ones. Okay, so just, you know, because there wasn't that many race highlights, so let's do a couple of quiz highlights. So how many people do you think had Antonelli in their top 10 out of 1,583 people?
I'm going to say around about 461 people.
I am going to go crazy and say 700.
No, it's far more. There's few people who didn't have him. So it's 1,453.
Yeah, that's a big number. Wow. And I expected it to be pretty big because, I mean, it's... Yeah.
Okay, all right. How many people had Behrmann in their top 10? Sam, this one's for you first.
Well, we... We know there was at least 50.
We've established
roughly
that there was 52. Mm-hmm. 52, yeah, exactly. Roughly, because you didn't remember.
Yeah. Hey, listen, at least I can read my notes, okay? Okay, let's go with...
Well, I'm sorry. You guessed 54, so that was a good guess. But yeah, so, you know, adding up all the other ones. So all the positions, how many people had Behrmann there?
72, I'm going to say.
I'm going to go a little bit higher and say 87.
Oh, nice. Just as 10 away. It's 97 even, so there's quite a few. We did do Hajar, right?
We did.
Or we didn't.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, that was how many?
140, if I remember correctly.
No, 540.
I got the 40, it's fine.
Yeah, so actually, we're left with Doohan, of course. How many people had Doohan in their top 10? That will be an interesting one.
Ooh. I'm going to say probably around about 46 people.
I'm going to stick to 33, and I'm going to say that probably after seeing the crash, it probably helped a lot of people not put him in. But I mean, of course, I personally love Jack Doohan as a driver. Genuinely, I was really happy to see him get into F1 this year. So, but unfortunately, I don't think that number is going to be high.
Is that divided by 2 minus 1? So it's only 16 people. That,
oh dear. Okay.
Doing their top 10.
Well, let's hope that turns around next weekend. For him.
Yeah.
I'm not done with the quizzes though. Which other drivers were predicted? So we've established that, okay, well, I mean, Verstappen has been predicted as P1. Of course, both McLaren drivers have been predicted as P1. We just established
that. What about
that
Lawson?
Okay, well, Lawson wasn't predicted on P1. But you want to know how many people had him in their top 10, right?
Because, I mean, since the switch with him and Yuki, I would have supposed, like, everybody's kind of thinking maybe he'll be more comfortable. He, like, knows the team.
No, you're right. We still need to do Lawson, and we still need to do Bortoletto. So let's do Lawson first.
Cool.
Well, what do you think?
Ooh, I'm going to go with 103 people.
I am going to say 18.
It was a lot more. It was 380 people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was one of them. I had him on P10 actually myself. Portoletto, that's the last rookie. What do you think? More people that had Doohan on their top 10 or Portoletto on their top 10? Doohan was 16.
Oh, I am going to say Portoletto.
Yeah, but with how many then?
Oh.
So I'm confirming there's more people with Portoletto.
Oh, Anton, so now I have to pick the numbers. You know,
less. Yeah.
Okay, let's go with how many more. So you asked me how many more in comparison to Doohan. So
no, well, just the total is all right.
Okay. Let's go with 44.
I'm going to go with 21.
Yeah, it was 23.
Could I have not been this close to answering in the actual quiz?
True. Yeah, and all these bonus questions are not changing. Not changing any of the... still, I do want to ask. So, out of the... Okay, there's one driver out of the, let's say, top four teams... So with that, I'm considering McLaren, Red Bull, Ferrari, and Mercedes. So for all of those, let's take a guess at how many people do you think had Antonelli as P1? That's Ooh. An interesting one.
Antonelli as P1. Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm going to say 7.
I'm going to go a little bit higher, maybe say 9.
It was three people, but...
Okay.
The direction I was going to take was, so besides the top four teams, there was only one other driver outside of the top four that has been picked as P1 by only one person. And my question to you is, who is that driver? And I mean, you can take a guess at who is that person, but it's an interesting one. So yeah, well, I mean, go ahead. Who do you think? You can only take one guess.
Oh my goodness.
So that question again though, Anton, you said what driver? You said you know the person.
Yeah, so out of the top four, you don't need to guess the person, but there's yes. So outside of the top four teams, mm-hmm. So that's obviously McLaren, Red Bull, Mercedes and Ferrari, there was only one other person in the whole game that picked a driver outside of the top four teams to be on P1. So the question is, who is that driver?
I'm going to say Alonso.
Interesting. Okay. I was going to go wild and say Albon.
Ooh.
Well, it's interesting. I actually, if I would have been asked this question, I was definitely going to say that there was going to be a couple of Spaniards that would have gone with Alonso because they always do. But this is really the exception. It's interesting. No, it was someone from the Philippines. Actually, it was someone who last time out even finished on the podium in that pre-game merchandise motor shop competition. I think it was third. But he went not with Albon, but with his teammate. He went with Sainz on P1.
Interesting. Oh. Okay.
So my intuition was saying Spaniard, just the wrong Spaniard.
Yeah, that is right. he went with, I mean, it was not all that strange, his prediction, because sometimes you have these people that make somewhat bogus predictions, I would say, but he had Sainz, Norris, Verstappen, Piastri, Russell, Albon, Antonelli, Hamilton, Bierman, Tsunoda. I mean, it's other than Sainz on P1, he might think Sainz is still in a Ferrari.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
Although it clearly says the team name as well in the app. Anyway, so... Yeah, I guess, that was a lot of bonus questions to make up for no bonus questions that we have never had so far. I think we did do actually one time, Sam, some bonus questions. But, we're gonna set a bonus question. I'm going to set a bonus question for every race. And... hopefully, the quiz competition will be so tight that we're actually going to need that bonus question. But for now, it's going to be the Canadian anthem that we're going to listen to. But not before that, we talk a little bit about the race next week, because we're in a triple header and we're going to go to Bahrain. And I already touched upon it slightly, but It's going to be a track where the rookies have a little bit more experience, where the teams have tested prior to the season. So what do the two of you expect from the race in Bahrain, and what are your predictions going to look like?
Oh, I think on my side, first of all, I'm going to be so happy that I can get up at a normal time and not at dawn's, like, crack for the next while, because I'm in the same sort of region. So that's a plus for me. But I'm looking forward to, like you say, Anton, the rookies probably being a little bit more confident on track, seeing that they've already done some testing there. And I'm wanting to see how that track evolution story is going to come out with the different weather that's picking up. Because, like you mentioned, it's looking a little bit warmer than what it was when the testing was actually happening. I know that Ferrari's been quite strong in Bahrain in the past, so I'm hoping that something comes of that. But I do think that the McLarens and hopefully Verstappen as well will keep their pace. And give us a little bit more of a show on track in the next week.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this track will play into McLaren hopefully a little bit. So we'll see if they can rebound from this race that just happened and maybe tighten up a little bit more of their strategy. I think that's a huge element that I still have yet to be fully confident in when it comes to McLaren. So I have hopes that will improve and that maybe we'll see the strength of them in terms of a result. However, I mean, we are looking at a situation off the backs of a very successful weekend for Max. And also, interestingly enough, maybe it'll be a very successful weekend for Red Bull in general, because this will be the second race for Yuki. So I'm really interested to see how he is going to be for Bahrain. And maybe we'll see a little bit more of a strength coming out of Ferrari. I think at this point in time, it's still early days. There's a lot of potential and across the board. And I'm just ultimately looking forward to seeing a race in less than 7 days. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I find it amazing to begin with that we've been able to talk for 1.5 hour about a race where hardly anything has happened.
See, we do have a lot to talk about.
Always find a way. We always find a way.
Well, I'm just hoping is going to be just a bit more chaos in, although, you know, I don't mind good race. I mean, I actually, to be really honest, I enjoyed the battle between the Red Bull and the two McLarens quite a bit up front. And, you know, if it doesn't result in any overtaking, doesn't mean it's a bad battle. I mean, it was, I did think that McLaren was going to have the longer legs, actually, and they didn't. So it's somewhat of a surprising outcome, even if there's no overtakes. But I do hope that with Bahrain we're going to see just a little bit more mix-up. But all in all, I mean, I'm very happy that we've seen three different race winners. I am afraid that McLaren still is going to be that strong that they're just going to walk away with it when we progress in the season. But don't count out Max Verstappen. I mean, in the end, it's just 1 point difference in the ranking now. And
62 and 61.
It's very early days. And I guess what I would like to see, if the McLarens are going to be as strong as we think that they are, that I just hope that Verstappen scores a lot of points so that it stays exciting, because that way we might get like a really, really nice last part of the season, which it's been a couple of years since we really could say that, you know, it went down to the wire. And you know who, you know, those are the seasons that you talk about, you know, for the future. So I hope we're going to see that. So for that to happen, I hope I hope Verstappen does well. And other than that, I'm just really looking forward to more predictions. more people joining the game, more people making groups, and more people being excited about Forecast F1 or Forecast 1, as we have sort of rebranded it, because, you know, in the App Store and the Play Store, actually the Play Store hasn't even objected, but the App Store doesn't want us to use the words F1 together. So, you know, Forecast 1, Forecast F1, doesn't really matter. I think most of us really refer to it as Forecast anyway.
Yeah. Now, I think, like you've mentioned, Anton, even if there's no overtakes or very little overtakes, sometimes pressure is what makes things interesting. So, like we say, 1 point difference in the Drivers' Championship when we're three races in, that's 1/8 of the calendar already done. So having that pressure, I think, is going to keep a lot of teams, especially the top four teams, on their toes. Because I don't think, like Sam says, we can rule Ferrari out completely. They've hidden the pace. We just don't know where, or they don't know where, and they need to find it, like they keep saying. But I'm going to be happy if we see a lot more pressure across the pack, I think, in the next coming 2 weeks as a whole, not just from the front runners.
All right. Time will tell.